Board of Appeals, we have three cases on our docket this morning for oral submission, and you all are the first. I understand you've spoken with our clerk and indicated the time that you need to argue, and if you all are ready, I'll have the clerk proceed to call the first case. Is counsel ready?
Yes, sir.
All right.
The court will now call William Blevins versus State Farm Mutual. And may I please the court, Mr. Ryan Bishop, to argue for the appellant, and please call to argue for the appellant.
Your Honors, I represent William Blevins. He was a plaintiff in a case that was presided over by Judge Wallace in the 96th Judicial District Court. The case was an automobile collision that happened in 2011. Mr. Blevins was T-boned at a high rate of speed by a car that was, according to all, to the witness, undisputed testimony, was going the wrong way and ran through a red light, smashed into the side of Mr. Blevins' vehicle. Mr. Blevins was then impacted from the rear by a different vehicle and then knocked into a car that was sitting at rest facing the other way at the intersection. There's no dispute that this was a major collision that totaled multiple vehicles, caused severe property damage. There's also no dispute, Your Honors, that Mr. Blevins suffered serious injuries in the collision.
Did the jury, I know that y'all pre-admitted a lot of exhibits about his medical records. Were those ever actually published to the jury? Do we know if the jury took them back into the jury room?
Yes, sir.
Is that in the record somewhere?
I don't know that it's in a record, but I don't think there's any dispute about that. I think the medical records were certainly alluded to during the trial. A witness who was at the scene went to the car immediately following the collision. She said that Mr. Blevins was hunched over his steering wheel, motionless. There's no dispute that he lost consciousness at the time of the collision. There's no dispute that he had severe bruising on his body, including up and down his leg, his wrist, his thumb, his neck and back hurt afterward. There's no dispute that he suffered a concussion in this collision. He was administered a Glasgow coma scale by the paramedics who transported him to the hospital. He didn't score perfectly on that, indicating that there were deficits right there at the scene. But he scored a 14 out of 15 on that scale. In short, Your Honors, there's no dispute that he suffered a brain injury in the form of a concussion, that he suffered other serious injuries in this collision, that it was a high-speed, serious, major impact collision. The trial centered, if you've read the briefing on this, on whether or not there were ongoing cognitive deficits associated with this injury. There was no dispute that he suffered pain, he suffered mental anguish associated with his other injuries in the collision, but the emphasis of the trial did center around his ongoing cognitive difficulties. The plaintiffs called an expert neuropsychologist, Dr. Andrew Houts, who testified about the significance of the fact that he lost consciousness, as well as the objective testing that was administered to Mr. Blevins, indicating deficits in numerous cognitive areas. There was no dispute about the fact that there was a brain injury at all in this case. The only issue was whether or not at the time of the trial there were still deficits and that there would be deficits in the future. The preeminent dispute that arose at trial was how to treat this case because it proceeded as a UM case. The person who T-boned Mr. Blevins at the intersection was a woman named Olivia Head. She was insured by a minimum policy of insurance, which was tendered and settled. The woman who impacted Mr. Blevins from behind, who probably didn't have much liability, she had a larger policy, but we settled short of the full policy limits, given her limited liability in the case. So the case proceeded to trial only against State Farm. State Farm was Mr. Blevins's underinsured motorist carrier. At trial, the chief issue was how to reconcile the defendant's wishes that we proceed like a regular car wreck case, as you may have seen alluded to in the record, with the fact that it was a direct action against State Farm.
Well, but when you say it was a direct action against State Farm, was it premature in the sense that before you could say that State Farm had done anything wrong, didn't you need a liability and damages finding in a certain dollar amount against the drivers?
Yes, Your Honor. That was part of the plaintiff's duty in a UM case to show that there was liability and also that there were damages and that they exceeded the coverage. So that was a prerequisite. But part of the proving that there was UM coverage to me meant that we have to discuss whether or not there was a policy of UM coverage that was in effect at the time of the collision, and two, whether or not it provided coverage for the types of damages that we were seeking at trial. Now, there is no dispute, I think, from the other side, there was none at the trial court, that we do have the obligation to show that there was, that we have the duty to prove up coverage. But State Farm's attorney wanted to limit that just to saying that there was a policy that was in effect, and there was
part of the difficulty here, counsel, is Voir dire's not transcribed. Okay, so you're asking us to figure out some confusion with regard to the jury. We don't. There are allusions to what was said during Voir dire. We don't have Voir dire. Okay, we don't have closing argument. We have no idea what was actually argued to the jury in terms of closing argument, because both sides waived transcription of closing argument as well as the charge being read to the jury. So we don't have that either. So all we've got is kind of this representations about actually what was said. And then on top of that, we can read from the record that Judge Wallace had an instruction that you were happy with in the original charge, but at the charge conference took it out, because when you said you were fine with the charges presented by Judge Wallace, that was fine. Counsel then objected, and he took a secondary aspect of that instruction about this being a UM coverage case out. But it's not quoted in the record. It was not tendered in terms of your objection to him removing it. So we have no actual idea what exactly was in that charge. So how are we to consider that point of error under those circumstances?
Your Honor, I did think that there was a record of exactly what was taken out. However, there are, of course, allusions to what was taken out. I think I specified pretty clearly on the record that what the second part of that stipulation was that was there and then removed by Judge Wallace was just a stipulation that the policy, the UM policy, did provide coverages for the types of damages that we were seeking at trial. That's what that said, that it provided coverage for the damages, if any, that were caused by the at-fault drivers.
I might be misremembering, but when that was specifically discussed at the beginning of trial,
right,
was that not in the context of stipulations for the court to apply, assuming that you successfully showed liability and damages?
Yes, Your Honor, we were talking about that at the beginning of the trial in the context of a stipulation, but that, in fact, became an instruction. I think we called it a stipulation or instruction, but the instruction that was actually given to the jury was just the first part of the stipulation that we had discussed earlier. And when you read in the record what I was wanting that stipulation to say, that's what the second part of that instruction was that was removed by Judge Wallace.
Okay, I want to go back to the factual sufficiency argument first. When you read the reporter's record, there are actually very few references to pain or headache or concussion. Okay, you tried this case pretty clearly on a neuropsychological damages case. Okay, and the jury clearly didn't buy that. All right. And now, according to State Farm, you're coming back saying, well, okay, there was real pain here, and because there's zero damages for pain, you got your due process, you got your opportunity to make your case, jury didn't buy it. Why should we have to go back for a new trial? Okay? So what authority do you have with regard to our inability not to basically buy that argument?
Your Honor, there are references to pain in the testimony that the jury heard, that certainly in the medical records that the jury received.
Mr. Blevins has 2 pages discussing his pain at the accident.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think it's within, I don't think anybody can dispute that if somebody suffers a blow to the head that results in swelling to the entire left side of the head, that there's pain associated with that. So the fact that I didn't emphasize that more, that may have been a mistake on my part, but it doesn't mean that there's not evidence of pain, because that's something that's commonly associated with those injuries. And there is testimony about pain. It's not very much, and certainly we did emphasize the brain injury. There's no doubt about that. But as far as the jury's answer to the question about, you know, how much to give, Your Honor, I think clearly that the reason that they did that is because we didn't meet our burden of proof of showing that there was coverage for these types of damages. That's the question that the jury sent back, if you'll recall, as soon as they started deliberating. Did the policy cover these types of damages? I have no doubt that they went back there and said, plaintiff has the burden, and he didn't prove that these types of damages are covered by the policy. And so, therefore, makes perfect sense. I predicted that from the very beginning, 000 for all the categories of damages.
Doesn't that fact actually support a position that you shouldn't even be talking about insurance in a case like this? The jury doesn't need to know about any of that because it's for the court to apply after the fact, right?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's the case. The jury knows from the very beginning of the trial that this is a direct action against an insurance carrier and that it's Mr. Blevins as insurance carrier. So there's going to be automatic confusion if you try this like it's any old car wreck case and you can't inject insurance into it. And as you read, I was chastised for myself injecting insurance into the case. But that's going to leave the jury with an apprehension that's not clear, and there's going to be lots of confusion about what the case is really about and why State Farm, the plaintiff's carrier, has to pay for these damages. What I wanted when I subpoenaed the corporate rep to testify about the coverage issue, including the terms and scope of coverage, was for the corporate rep for State Farm to say that, yes, we had a policy that was in effect at the time of the collision. Yes, it provided coverage for damages for bodily injury. And yes, bodily injury, importantly, includes the type of damages for pain, disfigurement, mental anguish, and those types that were being sought at trial. The inability.
Why is that not something that shouldn't have been done with regard to requests for admissions or depositions on written questions to establish that type of information?
That could have been done, Your Honor, but we'd be back at the same spot because the trial court didn't want that reference to come into evidence. We could have gotten it from the corporate rep. We could have gotten it through admissions. But either way, the problem was that Judge Wallace didn't think that insurance should be, or coverage issues should be injected into a UM case when, in fact, under the McLean case and other cases, the plaintiff has the duty to prove up coverage. And how can we do that if we can't get somebody, either through admissions or through a corporate representative, to say that, yes, the types of damages being sought are covered by this policy? That's what bodily injury means. So I think our inability to meet our burden of proof on whether or not there was coverage for these types of damages led to the verdict. I don't think the jury, for one second, believed that there was no physical pain, mental anguish, or disfigurement. You'll recall that there was testimony that even at trial, even right now, he has a lump on his head from where this collision took place. And I think there was no dispute, nobody. There's no testimony at all that there was no pain or suffering in the months after the collision. He was off work for 3.5 months. He went to a chiropractor. He was on pain medication, hydrocodone, for a good period of time, as you'll see in the evidence. In addition, in light of the judge's refusal to allow a corporate representative to testify about the scope of the coverage, I wanted the instruction or the stipulation to say that, yes, the types of damages being sought were covered by the UN policy. And that's the second part of that instruction that Judge Wallace refused to allow the jury to see. And so that, of course, led to the first question that the jury had, which is, are any of these damages covered by the policy? This was predictable, and I know you don't have the voir dire transcript. Lesson learned there, for sure, because there was confusion that was alluded to in our conversations with the judge. It bordered on chaos. You know, we would need to see the policy. Why are you suing State Farm? I mean, those types of things all came up, and so it made it very important at the outset of this trial that we get some clarity about why we're suing State Farm, what the scope of the coverage is, and whether or not it covered the types of damages that we were asking for. Beyond that issue and our inability to treat this case like a UM case, like the case law says that we should, the zero damages award by the jury is against the great weight preponderance of the evidence, and it's manifestly unjust. The jury didn't answer those questions because they didn't believe that he suffered. He clearly did suffer. There was no dispute about that. Case law is clear.
Your time has expired.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize.
May it please court. Lisa Hall and Janet Polinari on behalf of Appley State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. State Farm seeks an affirmance of the judgment rendered on the zero damages verdict. The trial court did not commit any reversible errors in the manner in which he conducted the trial. The jury charge complaint has not been preserved for error.
It's nowhere in the record in the trial court either.
That is correct, Your Honor. At one point, it was written down. That did not make it into the clerk's record. At the jury charge conference, it was discussed repeatedly, but they kept referring to it as it this, it that. And so the only indication of what the actual second paragraph of that special instruction is from Mr. Blevins' brief. With respect to the exclusion of evidence, there is no offer of proof. There is no bill of exception. There is no record of any kind of what question would be asked and what answers would be given. Texas law defines what are recoverable elements of damages. Texas law defines what is bodily injury. That's not a lay opinion from a State Farm claim rep. It is not an opinion from a sitting judge. Texas law decides what it is. Those are those five elements of recovery. There was no need for a State Farm representative to be asked any of those questions. With respect to factual sufficiency, with the utmost respect to Mr. Butcher, it is not accurate in any shape or form that there is no dispute over whether Mr. Blevins had a brain injury. His own neuropsychologist made it absolutely clear that there is a difference between a head injury and a brain injury, that people bump their head all the time and it doesn't result in any type of brain injury. The only medical record that was referenced with respect to concussion was an ER discharge form that said you've had a head injury that's not serious. It discussed concussion, and it defined a concussion as simply an altered state of mind.
That was a discharge diagnosis, though, was it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
That was the actual discharge diagnosis. It was also part of the differential diagnosis before he began treatment, was it not?
Yes, Your Honor, that he had a head injury.
So let's go over what was uncontroverted at trial. It was uncontroverted that he lost consciousness. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. I would say loss of consciousness, the degree of loss of consciousness.
No, there's testimony from an eyewitness that she thought he was dead. Where in the record did State Farm controvert loss of consciousness at the motor vehicle accident?
at the exact scene of the accident, that momentary loss of consciousness.
I need to know where in the record that's actually, there was no actual evidence provided by State Farm with regard to the accident other than cross-examination of the eyewitness, and there was no cross-examination with regard to her perception that, in fact, he lost consciousness, and there was no cross-examination with regard to his own testimony that he lost consciousness. So would you not agree that that was uncontroverted evidence of loss of consciousness at the accident?
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree that there was momentary loss of consciousness at the accident scene.
Okay. Would you agree that it's uncontroverted that he was disoriented at the accident and continuing, because there's reference in the medical records to repetitive questioning and amnesia, mental memory deficits with regard to that, that was not controverted by State Farm at trial?
No, Your Honor, I would not. And the reason why I say that is because there was conflicting testimony by Mr. Blevins himself between what he could remember, what he couldn't remember. He said different things at different times about what occurred for him at the accident scene. At one point in the record, I can't remember any of it. Another point, I do remember looking for my phone. I do remember trying to call my wife on the phone. I remember looking for my son, Nathaniel. And so there was conflict within the testimony itself by Mr. Blevins.
Okay, is there a controversy with regard to the hematoma on the side of his head?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Oh, okay, so the MRI where it's talking about swelling across the quote-unquote entirety of his left side of his head, that was controverted at some point in time.
Within the context of the trial, if you'll, may I explain?
Sure.
Basically, the neuropsychologist testified that Mr. Blevins had bleeding on the brain and that he had a subdural hematoma. Neither of those facts proved true.
Those are two different things. Subdural
Absolutely.
Hematoma is in fact supported by the record.
With the utmost respect, Your Honor, I would disagree. It's a subregional hematoma, which is on the outside of the skull. It was a 3-millimeter bruise that the record shows resolved itself within 8 days when he went to see his own treating neurologist.
Okay, 3 millimeters in terms of depth, because 3 millimeters wouldn't cover the entirety of somebody's head.
Yes, Your Honor, 3 millimeters, it's like a welt, 3 millimeters on the side of his head.
So that was objective, uncontroverted evidence of actual trauma to the head.
Absolutely.
Okay. And there's no controversy with regard to headaches at the point of accident or being treated for that at the hospital.
The records themselves show inconsistencies about complaints of headaches. The records themselves show inconsistencies about the use of pain medication, about whether at the ER he had neck pain versus back pain. In chiropractic records, he says, I didn't start to have neck pain until 3 weeks later. The ER record says, I have neck pain. He goes back and forth, and it's all laid out in the brief about how there's a complete lack of consistency in these pain complaints and these physical injuries that were never once produced to the jury. Of the 9 or so exhibit references in appellant's brief, only one of them involves something that was actually published to the jury.
And what authority do you have for us to be able to ignore exhibits that were admitted on the record into evidence on the grounds that nobody really discussed them one way or the other? What authority do you have that we can conclude that the jury properly ignored evidence that was admitted for their consideration when we can't go into deliberations?
I would submit to the court that I am not asking the court to ignore anything that's in the record. But the evaluation that is put on this court.
What was the point of saying it wasn't published then?
Because this court's obligation is to consider whether the ruling is against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence. What did the jury get it wrong? Which is a very high standard. It must be manifestly unjust. It must be clearly wrong. It must show bias. You cannot take discrete references out of medical records and not put it in context of all four witnesses over 2 days and all 450 pages of documents. It's whether the totality of the evidence is against a great weight and preponderance. I would say to this court that it is no different than Judge Walker's opinion in Rashida versus Acevedo, unpublished opinion in 2005, Westlaw 1120023, in which Justice Walker wrote that the credibility assessment and the weight to be given evidence solely belongs to the jury, and that not all pain is compensable.
Okay, we cited that also in In Re State Farm, where we reversed Judge McCoy on granting a motion for new trial in a UM case. Okay. But the standard there stated also indicates that we're to be looking to determine whether or not there's uncontroverted objective evidence of injury. So is there no uncontroverted objective evidence of injury at the motor vehicle accident as far as State Farm is concerned in this case?
Not that rises to the level of serious and objective such that damages must be awarded to Mr. Blevins. Absolutely not.
Okay. So y'all cite Golden Eagle in the case because the court, the Supreme Court in Golden Eagle, talks about a significant injury, objective evidence of significant injury, but it then goes on to cite provingly Monroe versus Grider, which in turn cites one of our cases, Hammett versus Zimmerman, and applied the same standard we did in that case to uphold a jury's finding that an injured party is entitled to nothing for past pain and suffering. And in language, the jury would be required to find by a preponderance of the evidence that the injured party's injury was unaccompanied by any, and that was highlighted, any pain and suffering. So you think that the judgment in this case meets that standard?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I would like to point out an opinion that just came out 7 days ago, Saucedo versus Hess. It is from the Houston 14th, 2018 Westlaw 1918291. The importance of that case is it simply, again, deals with factual sufficiency of a zero damage verdict, and it relies heavily on this court's In Re State Farm, which is relied heavily in our brief. The standard for reversal, again, is manifest unjust. And there's, from my perspective, it does matter. And I have absolutely no authority for it, and I tried desperately. It's been about 20 years since I've had a legal research class. But I think it matters whether it was presented at trial. One of the first questions Justice Kerr asked was whether things were published to the jury. And they were not. The record is clear that they are not.
Do you dispute that the evidence that was admitted by the court went back to the jury for its consideration during deliberations? Can you categorically tell us they didn't look at any of the medical records during deliberations?
No, I cannot categorically tell you that they did. I can tell you that the record indicates that they were in session for 45 minutes on the first day and 1 hour on the second day. I am going to presume that Judge Wallace followed the Texas Rule of Civil Procedure and made the exhibits available to the court.
How long would it take to read the discharge summary?
Well, the discharge summary states that you've had a head injury that's not serious, and you've had a concussion that is nothing more than an altered state of mind. There's no indication the length of the loss of consciousness. There's no testimony from Mr. Blevins that he sustained pain or discomfort as a result of...
Other than the prescription for pain and anti-nausea to go along with that particular prescription.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But there's also inconsistencies in the record whether he took the medication and when he stopped. There's nothing in the record that speaks to reasonable medical probability. Where is the evidence within the record, in those medical records, where there is a differential diagnosis? For instance, many of those records occur 2 years after the fact. They occur while to his own treating neurologist. This gentleman was under the care of his own neurologist for an anti-seizure disorder. In those records are West Nile virus, meningitis, seizure disorder, syncope, previous concussions, and severe sleep apnea. He was regularly seeing a neurologist. He had an appointment 8 days after this accident. When he went to that appointment, this had resolved. The MRI was the same as his prior MRI. The treating neurologist did not change his protocol in any way, did not prescribe any pain medication. The record, if we're going to look at those discrete references, then the court has to look at all of the evidence and see if it is against great weight and preponderance, which I would submit that it is not. State Farm, again, prays that the judgment be affirmed and that all of the appellant's issues be overruled. Unless the court has any additional questions, I will yield the rest of my time, although it's not much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hall. Rebuttal, Mr. Butcher?
I guess I'm a little bit surprised at how casually the attorney for the appellee dismisses a concussion. A concussion, of course, is a brain injury, and Dr. Houts described how a concussion takes place, and that it is a brain injury. The only issue at trial was whether and to what extent there were still ongoing cognitive deficits associated with the brain injury that he definitely suffered. Undisputed by defense counsel or anybody at trial, all the evidence showed that he had a concussion that was diagnosed that was causing him problems immediately at the scene, including the fact that he was hunched over a steering wheel and a witness thought he was dead and that he had loss of consciousness. And this was a serious collision. Suffice to say, there is no case law anywhere that counsel has been able to cite for the proposition that somebody can have injuries this significant and not be compensated. The case law says that if there is objective evidence of injury, there has to be compensation. A jury has to provide compensation. If the jury would have given him $5 for his pain and suffering, that would be a different argument that I'd have to be making. But the fact that they gave nothing, even though there's clear evidence in this case of a serious injury with objective evidence of injuries that were significant, altering somebody's consciousness, that to me is very, very significant. Even if counsel disagrees with that. So I think the case has to be reversed and remanded, tried again for those reasons, because the fact that the jury chose to give zero for all of his categories of damages, even though there's objective evidence supporting all of those damages. But if we go back to trial and have to do this again, I think we will end up in the same predicament that we're in now if we're not allowed to say, because this is a UM case that where we have the burden to prove up coverage, just that the policy covered the types of damages that we're seeking at trial. We're not wanting to belabor the point about insurance or inflame the jury, get them angry with an insurance company, but it's important in a UM case in where a jury knows that the carrier is the defendant, that they're being sued, to understand the reasons why.
Do you have any cases where a jury instruction such as the one you wanted was actually given?
No, Your Honor, I do not. However, the instruction that I wanted to be given was just the second best option to having a corporate representative there testifying that the policy would have covered the types of damages that we were asking for. So I don't have a case to cite specifically for that proposition, but there are cases, however, that support my contention that the plaintiff is allowed in a UM case to have a corporate representative testify. I believe I cited the Luna case and the Enrique Garcia case, maybe some others for that proposition, but I believe that is the law. So I'd ask that the court reverse and remand with instructions that the plaintiff be allowed to introduce evidence concerning the scope of coverage of this policy. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Butcher, Ms. Hall, thank you very much for your arguments here today. We appreciate them. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and we'll remain on the bench while the second case for oral submission moves forward.